Hello, Red Raiders and listeners across Texas and the U.S. Thank you once again for tuning in to Riding Right with the Raiders. As always, God bless America and God bless Texas. My name is Kevin Allen, and I'm here with my host,
Caleb Jensen.
And today we have a special guest. We have the Lubbock County Republican Party Chair, David Brugel.
Hey, good to be here, guys.
Thank you. It's a privilege to finally get to speak to you and have you on the podcast with us. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, who you are, how you got involved, and how long you've been in this game?
Sure. Thanks again for the opportunity to be here again. I appreciate the work the Tech College Republicans does to advance our values on campus. You know, campus is really the front lines of the battle for the conservative ideology. There's a lot of liberal nonsense that goes on there, and you guys are fighting the good fight, and we're really proud of your efforts. So I came to be involved in politics actually in high school. I had been interested in history most of my life, studied the American Revolution, classical antiquity, things of that nature. And really what I saw through the course of history is the effect that political involvement had on things. Whether it was the Athenian democracy, moving up through the Middle Ages, onto, of course, our American Revolution, really ideas, political ideas, have shaped our governments, which have shaped our societies. And so that's been something that's been very fascinating to me. And early on, when I was young, I didn't really know that one could very easily be involved in those things. I thought you had to have a great deal of money or influence to engage in that field. But watching several friends of mine throughout junior high and high school, I saw that really you just need to start taking action and you can make an impact in the local community all the way up to the state and national levels to a degree.
I completely agree. That's definitely something your younger Republicans and conservatives are yearning for, is they want people to take action. They're, you know, they're tired of hearing the talk and the grandstanding and then nothing happens. They want people that will go in there and get the work done, in addition to being transparent about what they're going to accomplish, what their goal is. Because a lot of times you hear about a politician saying they're going to do X, Y, Z. Do they do it? Kind of, but not to the extent that they talked about. And that's really something that has, I think, pretty much triggered a attention basis around Texas specifically with younger Republicans. How have you seen the party change growing up here in Lubbock?
Sure. So I became involved around 2009. Of course, I monitored things from a distance, watching the news and hearing my my dad and other people in the area talk about what was going on. But I really became involved when the Tea Party movement was coming up back in 2009. There was a nationwide movement of people that were frustrated about excessive taxation, things of that nature, and they really wanted their voice to be heard. It was a major political movement at the time, and I really thought that was fascinating, and I saw everyday folks getting involved, and I said, you know what, I want to take a part in that.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I vaguely remember that. You know, I was born in 1991, so I wasn't too keen on politics yet, but I do remember my parents talking about that movement. Let's go ahead and dive in here. Our first topic today is the path to winning all local offices for the GOP and setting the bar there. I want people to kind of hear for Lubbock, Texas, you know, what is your vision for achieving a clean Republican sweep of all local offices in Lubbock County?
Sure. So on a partisan basis, we've achieved it. In the very last, most recent general election in 24, we were able to successfully elect a county commissioner and county constable for Northeast Lubbock County. And those two seats were the last two Democrat-held seats in Lubbock County. That's been something I've been involved in working in for the past 13 years at least, when I started with a campaign in that district where I was helping a friend back in 2012. And it was just really neat to see that come full circle, the efforts of thousands of people and countless voters that have sought to see total Republican control of our county government. We're very excited because we're hosting our gala this coming week. And for the first time in anyone's known history, we should have all five Republican members of the Commissioner's Court at a GOP event. So we're very excited to see that kind of representation for our party, and not just for our party. Parties run deeper than that. It's our ideals as conservatives.
That's really exciting to hear, and that's good to know about Lubbock, Texas, because a lot of times you look at these other counties and you know that there's Republicans there, but you watch a lot of arguing in the party. And I think Lubbock is special because a lot of times you're going to have disagreements, different opinions, but in the end, the majority gets on the same page and gets work done and gets into office the way that they need to. Do you feel that we've lost ground locally at all anywhere, or that we might be? And what would preventing that look like?
Sure. So one thing that Republicans across the state have begun to realize is they really need to pay attention to not only what the partisan offices are doing. We're talking about our county courthouse, our state legislature, and our federal government. It's of the utmost importance that we pay close attention to what's going on at City Hall and in our school districts. The Democrats have often found an opportunity to take office in those nonpartisan seats in more right-leaning areas of the state. So we need to remain vigilant as we continue to defend our majorities in the state house and the courthouse to ensure that we've got good conservative Republicans running for those seats on the city council and on the school boards as well.
What role do you believe that grassroots activisms and grassroots conservative efforts play in the local victories here in Lubbock County?
We would have nothing if it weren't for grassroots efforts. The ultimate grassroots effort is showing up and casting a Republican vote. One thing, Kevin, that has really amazed me and dumbfounded me is the number of conservative-leaning people that choose not to vote. Even in far-left states, if we had enhanced Republican participation beyond historic levels, we would see victories nationwide. But there's a lot of voter apathy. A lot of people think, you know, out of 100,000 voters, if I show up and vote, it doesn't make a difference. The problem happens when 10, 15, 20,000 people think that and nobody shows up. So beyond simply voting, which is the most important thing we need to do, the next step is inspiring other people to vote. One thing I'm always diligent to do around election time is make contact with my good friends and family and say, hey, we've got an important election coming up. This is what's going on. Inform yourself and go show up and cast a vote. And that really is the basis of political activism. In the end, all political work is really communication work. What we need to do, communicate our ideas and inspire people to take action.
That's definitely something that's been discussed at the state levels with work that I'm involved in. The general consensus that a bunch of us have come to is we've got to get people to actually vote. You know, there might be voter fraud in some counties and other areas at different levels of government, regardless of who's doing it. But we have enough conservatives and Republicans that if we got them actively voting, it would almost not even matter because of how many people potentially Texas could have voting. So how would you respond to critics who say the GOP has taken local strongholds for granted?
Oftentimes we get really excited when we year over year win a state like Texas with our large number of electoral votes, and we do get a little complacent in our strongholds like this. I think there was a big wake-up call several years ago when we had a pretty close call in the U.S. Senate election, and that helped wake a lot of people up and understand that even in a conservative stronghold, if our people don't show up and vote in large numbers, we could even lose a state like Texas. I don't see that happening anytime soon, but that really is up to our voters.
That's a big reason why here at Texas Tech, what the Tech College Republicans are implementing, we're implementing voter education at student orientations, but we're also, I'm able to register people to vote. So I register them to vote because students don't understand. They haven't been in the game long enough. And that's what we're trying to help with is you've got to fill out everything correctly if you want to vote. There's also, have you been in Lubbock for X amount of time? How long have you been at this address? And you can't just move to a city or county and put your old address. Even if you're in the dorm, it counts. You're a citizen. You can register to vote. You just got to be registered 2 months prior to any elections. I think that's the rule. I could be wrong on that. And that's what we're doing and why it's important and showing them by different examples. Like one really good example that we've talked about is introducing the policy difference between Republicans and Democrats. And I think that's definitely something we're interested in putting in front of them. Do you think that would be beneficial to students moving to Lubbock, Texas?
You know, Kevin, it already has. A lot of the folks that come here to go to Texas Tech from Dallas, Houston, or Austin, they even the conservative ones, they think, you know, I can still vote for Governor Abbott, Senator Cruz, people like that. They think it doesn't matter where they vote. But one thing we've noticed, the district that we were able to win last time to turn the county fully red is one where many students live. That district includes the Texas Tech campus and the North and South Overton neighborhoods. And conservative student votes had a measurable impact in that district. So it's very important that when students come here to Tech, that they register to vote here. It has a very substantial impact on our local politics.
That's great to hear that there's already been progress before we really got here and started implementing a lot of these things, because it had really fallen to the wayside because of COVID. And then everybody was just kind of scattered, and we've had to really regroup and get everything back online and reestablish connections between Tech College Republicans, our local GOP, Conservative Action Network, Lubbock Area Republican Women. And that's something that I've personally, I knew about it. I knew they didn't know. So I took the initiative and said, hey, let's fix this. Let's get everybody networked in and working together.
Interestingly enough, Kevin, one of the most important things in this in institutional leadership is a successful transition of leadership. And oftentimes with campus organizations, that can be a great challenge. I've over the 15 years or more I've been involved in politics here in Lubbock, I've come to know many impressive young men and women that have led our Texas College Republicans chapter here at Texas Tech. But you know what? They often graduate. They go home to New Mexico, Dallas, Austin. We've even seen people go all the way to Washington. And oftentimes that leaves a vacuum here without the next generation having been trained. So really my encouragement to anyone running a student organization at Texas Tech, especially one as pivotal to our success as the Texas College Republicans, is they always be looking out for who the future leaders of the group are. The seniors mentoring the freshmen is a big deal, and it's absolutely mission critical for what you guys do.
You know, that makes a really good idea that I just had. Just like in Greek life, they have bigs and littles. Maybe that's one thing that we could start for graduating seniors is the incoming freshmen. The graduating seniors get to teach the incoming freshmen on how we do things and basically why we do the things that we do.
Yeah, that's definitely something that we're talking about. We want a mentorship program, and we really want to create a revolving door so that we're educating, they're paying their dues, they're working themselves up, they're becoming officers. And I think it's important that we just don't send people out into politics without educating them. And part of that also, I think, is integrating them with local organizations so that it's not just they're seeing it at a college level, but they're actually getting to see it play out at their local and state levels, which is another reason we take people to the Capitol in Austin for convention each year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and even being the chairman of the Republican Party in Lubbock, you know, I stand on the shoulders of giants. Anything I've been able to achieve in my first term so far, I owe entirely to my predecessors, who've been incredible mentors. I've had the pleasure of serving under numerous chairmen before me, and each and every one of them I've learned something from that's helped me do a better job today.
How exactly did you get in the position you are as chair of the Lubbock County Republican Party?
So That's a long story, Kevin, but we've got time. The first time I considered running for the office of chairman of the Republican Party was back in 2012. There had been an opening that occurred, and I started talking to some folks and said, hey, I think this is something I want to do. I was pretty young at the time. And a very wise friend of mine said, David, don't do it. said, "You're not ready." I was pretty offended at the time, but he was right. I wasn't ready for that. I didn't know what I was doing. I needed to wait. So I chose to take the better part of a decade to continue working under other chairmen. Eventually served as the treasurer of the party, one of its officers, more recently in the role of vice chairman under Chairman Cole Shooter. And then when he determined his time was up and he was going to step down, I filed to run for the office, and no one ended up running against me. You know, I had a little bit of a free ride there for my first term. Of course, we'll see how things go with the second term. But most of the people knew me that were involved in the Republican Party. They knew the work I'd done under the previous several chairmen, and they decided to give me a shot, see what I could do.
I think that's an important thing to remember is you've got to be willing to let go of the reins, give someone a chance, and kind of pass the torch, you know. And we've seen some people come in and they don't know how to do that. And then when it's time to do it, they just kind of dump everything on whoever's left in the student orgs, like Tech College Republicans. And it creates a sink or swim situation that not all orgs survive in the state of Texas. And since we've got kind of a template going at Tech College Republicans and it's working, we're actually currently trying to get Lubbock Christian University's Tech College, or not their Tech College, but their College Republican org online. If it is online, we're going to get it, try to get it in line with the Federation of College Republicans, and the same with SPC. And we're also looking at Wayland. Phil is actually doing some regional director work. Philip Penny, who's the current president, and branching outside of Lubbock and hitting different West Texas areas. Because I'll be quite honest, we're not exactly enthusiastic about what we've seen with Bernie Sanders and Beto O'Rourke going to Amarillo, and that's the last thing we want is to have that start happening here in Lubbock, even though I do know Beto has come to Lubbock. But our concern is if that were to happen, it could start to pivot things in a direction that we've worked hard to already accomplish.
You know what, Kevin? Just let them come, man. We're going to continue to aggressively work hard to continue to do a good job of representing our views. And you know what? Tell Beto, tell Bernie, come on over. We had Donald Trump Jr. here last year. I think we can pretty well outdo anything they can bring.
That's a really good point. I mean, there's no way when it comes to drawing power. I'm pretty sure Lubbock, between Jody Arrington, Carl Tepper, Dustin Burroughs, Charles Perry, and then the GOP that we have here partnering with Lubbock Area Republican Women, we do get some pretty big names frequently that come to Lubbock that don't always make it on the news. And I try really hard to advertise that to students and get them involved so that they can get to know their leaders and politicians and talk to them and interact with them. You know, it humanizes them a little bit for the younger generation.
Yeah, people often get the illusion that political figures are larger than life. But having been involved in a number of political campaigns, having worked in the state legislature, I can tell you these guys eat lunch and go to bed just like the rest of us.
You know, talking about – I kind of want to shift gear here and talk about opportunities to become involved, because we're talking a lot about opening doors and connecting the dots. For someone listening to this podcast that's a young conservative or Republican, even if they're not in Lubbock – what do you think the first step would be for them getting involved?
So I can only recommend what I did years ago. Then you just start showing up to events. Back my first year was 2009, being involved in this, and I started attending candidate forums. And I really got to know a lot of people quickly. I got to understand opportunities to be involved, and wound up being involved in the first campaign I assisted on. I went to see then CPA Charles Perry, who's now our state senator, when he was running for the House of Representatives back then, went to see him at his office, and he handed me a stack of cards and said, "Go tell your neighbors about me." And so that I did. And we were able to win the precinct that I had knocked by a substantial margin. We were pretty excited about that. So really, if anybody wants to get involved in politics, and I would encourage everyone to have some degree of involvement, just start showing up to meetings. Shaking hands, getting to know people, and learning. The other thing I've seen is that when you get involved in politics, you want to listen twice as loudly as you speak.
That's a good point to make, because a lot of times, and I've seen it just at a local level too, things are not always the way they seem, and a lot of times people jump on a bad bandwagon without really knowing the full story, and it just creates an entirely different narrative, and it muddies everything up. So it's crucial that we really understand our policies, our politics, our political environment, our political ecosystem that we have. Otherwise, our efforts can end up being detrimental to the party we support.
It kind of starts a avalanche that slowly starts from a snowball, then turns into a ginormous avalanche. But it kind of reminds me of what Jason said our last episode that we recorded. How just getting in contact with politicians and basically getting your foot in the door with anybody and everybody with events and just trying to get started definitely gets you a good name and people will start remembering you.
Yeah, exactly. That's just how it goes. Well, and then having an attitude of a servant. A lot of people get involved in politics and they get really wound up in the allure and glamour of it without realizing that really the way to make a difference is you grab a stack of brochures and you go start talking to your neighbors. It is it's not glamorous, but it's impactful. Like I said earlier, guys, politics is it's a communication business. And the way we win elections is by winning votes. And the way we win votes is by turning hearts.
So as chairman of the Lubbock County Republican Party, what opportunities exist within the local GOP for young conservatives or college students?
Yeah, so there's actually a lot coming up. So the election cycle kind of comes in two-year cycles. We start off with the filing era and the primary elections, where different candidates are vying to be the GOP nominee for various seats. And that's where I became involved initially back in 2009. And really, that's where you get to know the candidates running in the primary election to be the Republican nominee. You pick who you like, and you get behind them, and you go knock the doors for them. You make the phone calls for them and support them as hard as you can. A lot of people, like I say, don't understand the value in doing that, and it is just incredibly valuable. So that's step one. Now, going into the summer and fall, that's when we have the opportunity to support those candidates in the general election. We had a whopper of a general election last year where we were able to elect President Trump to a second term. We were able to retain our U.S. Senate seat and continue to retain our majorities in the state legislature. Not only that, but because of those grassroots efforts, we were also able to, as we discussed earlier, for the first time in the history that I know of, elect a full slate of county Republican officials. So, if I was to give any advice to young folks or old folks interested in getting involved in politics, I would say go pick a candidate and start talking to people about them.
That's really solid and sound advice there, Mr. Bruegel, and I really appreciate someone coming forward and saying that. You know, you talk about Lubbock. We have a lot of business owners here, and we have a lot of churches, and we have civic leaders that support conservative candidates. But a lot of times there's some legal issues. People don't want to, they don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to lose their funding. And so I wanted to ask, you know, what can churches, businesses, and those leaders do to support Republican candidates without stepping into legal or ethical gray areas?
So the matter with churches is a little more complex. Of course, pastors have freedom of speech just like anyone. They're able to voice their opinions on issues. Of course, they need to use their discretion in how best to do that within the bounds of their ministry. But business leaders, you're right, Kevin, a lot of business leaders are afraid to be involved in politics because they think, well, you know, I might lose customers if I get involved in one side or the other. And that can sometimes be true. A degree of discretion is needed. What I've seen in my business is that having been politically outspoken, I've actually ended up taking on a number of customers that share my views. They say, you know what, this guy thinks like we do. He's a champion for our issues, and we want to support him. So I've seen that go both ways.
Do you think, and this is local, state, however you want to take it, do you think the Republican Party does enough to identify and train our next generation of candidates?
We are certainly doing that work. I would like to see even more done. That's an initiative I'd like to see continue to develop over the next 2 to 4 years. Really, you're right, Kevin. Just like we talked about earlier in organizational leadership, it's very important that we have a large bench of candidates ready to jump in and run when the time comes. And that starts at the entry level. We need people that are ready to run for the school board and city council. They're substantially less, glamorous or fabulous type of jobs, but they're absolutely critical to our government running successfully and to making sure our values are well represented.
Talking about values, I'm going to move on to the next topic a little bit here. And talk about how faith shapes our political views as Republicans and conservatives. How has your personal faith shaped your approach to politics and leadership?
Sure. So my faith is in Jesus. I've been a Christian for many years now, and Jesus changed my life. The way that impacts my politics is oftentimes in the way I present things. I don't come from a position of hatred, or at least I try my best not to. I don't hate our opponents. I don't hate our frenemies, if you will. I want to see what's best for everyone. And I also want to see that our freedom of speech, which is one of our pivotal rights, is maintained in this country so we can continue to, without inhibition, share the gospel of Jesus Christ to all others.
You know, when you talk about faith and politics, today's culture, and I'm sure you've seen the same thing because I think you and I are not that far apart in age. The culture is so different from when I was growing up.
Yes.
And the stuff we have seen. How do we defend faith-based values without being labeled as extremist when we're routinely having people come after us and tell us, you know, your faith has no business in politics?
You know, Kevin, we do it just like the Lord told us to do in Scripture. We speak the truth in love. And so you'll see a lot of people in politics, they like to call people names, make fun of others, things like that. We need to be above that. We have a higher calling, and we need to represent not only our political views in our party, but more importantly, we need to represent our Savior, Jesus Christ, in the way we do things. Sometimes it's not even about as much what you say, but how you approach it.
Do you think there's a balance when it comes to professionalism, being humble, and promoting the truth while engaging in a political debate?
Yeah, I think so. And I've seen just a handful of people do this very well. They're able to very firmly and clearly state their views while not having a prideful or haughty heart. Those have been some very incredible people. One of those is Senator Charles Perry. That man is amazing in the way he's able to take a firm position, but not come from a place of hatred or malice. He just tells it like he sees it, and he's always humble about it. But he's also bold. Humility and boldness are not exclusive. You can maintain both virtues in this industry.
I think that's very important for our younger Republicans and conservatives to hear because, you know, if you turn on the news, and I want to be clear, I'm someone, there's not a TV in my bedroom. I can't stand to sit and watch the news. It makes me depressed. But, you know, we're in our phones a lot, and we've seen a lot of extreme situations with protests and people just really taking it to a level that it never should have got to, whether it's lighting stuff on fire, desecrating the American flag,
tearing down historical statues and memorials.
Yeah, I mean, even at Tech, we get called rapists and pedophiles, and I've said this on a few episodes, but it's true. And we have to talk to them and say, you know, why do you think that? What do you feel that way? What am I supporting? And kind of throw it back on them and figure out what is making them feel that way. And not everyone can do that. It's really important, in my opinion, to get the younger generations to understand, do not be gaslit and think that you just have to call to arms the second. We're always going to have opposition. That's the way politics are. It's not going to go away, but there is a way to conduct yourself. Now, if you've gone through all the different systems and, I mean, even myself as an example, I've went through all these different channels and systems to get stuff done. And there are times when it falls on deaf ears and you've done everything you can. Okay, well, you take it to the next level. You become more of an activist. And I think younger people really need to understand, you want to make the Republican Party look good. You want to make conservatives look good. Violence and name-calling and going out and damaging property is not the way to represent your party.
No, not at all, Kevin. You know, there's actually some scripture that comes to mind in regard to those interactions. It's countercultural, man. But in the Gospels, it says, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, and do good to those that hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you. People will try to spitefully use you if you get involved in politics. Do we need to respond in anger? No. We're supposed to pray for them. And that is really hard, man. I have had a really hard time doing that from time to time. But thankfully, God is good. And when I stumble and have a bad attitude, he's been faithful to get me back on track, you know?
I completely understand. God is good. And I know, you know, it's no secret who I am in Lubbock. You've seen my interactions. I can be quite vocal. There's times, you know, I've had to clean up the way I talk a lot. And there's times you just have to bite your tongue, be humble, be graceful, but be authoritative and firm in a polite and respectful way. Because it's also true in this day and age, a lot of stuff can come back and bite you if you're not careful, even if you really were in the right because of the way you conducted yourself and you didn't go through the proper channels and handle it like an adult. You're not going to get the response that you intended in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
In Lubbock, a lot of times when we see politics, and especially during elections, do you believe that churches should be more vocal on policy issues like parental rights, school curriculum, or abortion?
So I have a kind of nuanced view on this. I think Christians, on an individual basis, often should. Churches as an institution need to make certain that their focus is on the gospel. Now, there comes a time, particularly with our recent pro-life ordinance, where I thought it was a great idea to see numerous of our churches involved. But there also comes a point when that activism needs to take place on the individual churchgoer's level, more so than the institution itself.
That actually takes us right into topic four, understanding nuance problems as a political activist.
Why is it dangerous for conservatives to rely on headlines instead of digging deeper into issues?
Yeah, so the media these days, particularly in this short video format social media world we're living in, likes to try to boil down complex issues to 30-second clips. In a podcast format like this, where we'll talk for an hour, hour and a half, we're able to dive deep into stuff. Even in the blogging environment, they're able to get down into the meat of the issues and look at what's going on. But oftentimes, in the talking point world that we're living in, it's very difficult to actually understand what's really going on. And so what's important is for voters to take the time to look into what's actually going on. One thing I noticed was, particularly back in the legislative session, people would have a very strong opinion about a bill or a resolution, And they hadn't actually looked to see what it said. And oftentimes it didn't say what other people thought it said. They were just going off of talking points of people that had an agenda. And make no mistake, everyone involved in politics has some form of agenda. It's our job as individuals to understand what that agenda is and see through it to see the whole truth of the matter.
You know, I don't know if you've ever heard this before. It was new to Commissioner Corley when I've talked to him recently. I don't even think it was on an episode. I think it was just on the phone, getting to know him a little bit. I always refer to Lubbock as, if you want to get into politics, you know, again, you don't have to be a poli-sci major, but Lubbock is a great political training ground because a lot of stuff you see in Lubbock, you see at a smaller scale. And what I mean is, like, if you see stuff happen at a federal level or in DC or at the Capitol, you'll see smaller variants of it kind of pop up in Lubbock. And I think it's a great training ground for future Republicans, conservative activists, and politicians that want to try and make something of it and of themselves and actually create change and ensure that our Republican principles and values are maintained in a political changing landscape. You know, a really good example is having Carl Tepper, Charles Perry, Dustin Burrows, and when he has time, Jody Arrington here. A lot of people don't realize, you know, because if you give in and buy into social media, you'll see, oh, we invited Senator Perry or Representative Tepper or Congressman Arrington, but they never show up. They're never here. No, yes, they are here. And if you go to the events that they're at, they will take time to talk to you, get to know you. They'll hear you out. They'll interact with you. I mean, I've got handwritten letters from Carl Tepper. I've gotten letters from Dustin Burrows. Jody Arrington and Carl Tepper both went to work for me and helped me get on Social Security disability income because I couldn't get it. I fought it for 2 years and couldn't. And we have a very supportive and uplifting collection of elected officials that are really great role models for future politicians here.
Yeah, we really do. We're really blessed with the representation we've got here in West Texas, all the way from Congress down to the State House, man. It's been pretty fantastic how accessible these guys are and ready to answer questions, and their staff as well. You call their office and they're helpful and friendly and ready to assist.
You know, you've been in Lubbock and you've been in the game for quite a while. Do you have any examples of like a local issue that's more complicated than it seems on the surface that is really a good example of why we need to be discernative and really kind of investigate the deeper side of issues without just going into them?
Yeah, so oftentimes one of the issues that's very difficult to understand is the property tax issue. For a number of years, we had some people at City Hall that like to say, you know what, we kept the tax rate the same. We didn't raise taxes. Sounds right, right? Didn't change the tax rate. Therefore, we didn't raise the taxes. Well, no, it goes deeper than that. With the way our tax rating system works, oftentimes, in order to prevent a tax increase, you have to change that tax rate. If you keep the rate the same year over year, oftentimes it actually has the effect of raising taxes due to raising appraisal values. And this is something when I got started, it was very difficult to understand. I think I had to have it explained to me 4 or 5 times before I really understood it. So that's just one of many examples of a very nuanced issue that's more complex than meets the eye.
Here's a question that I think is important. How do we keep our base informed without losing momentum in the details when it comes to politics and getting involved actively?
Yeah, and that is a tricky one, man. Oftentimes we do have to figure out how to present clear, concise communications. We have to learn how to take complex issues like that tax issue, and we have to boil it down into 30-second talking points. It's tough, man, but it's one of the challenges we've been given as political communicators. This is something where we've seen presidents like President Reagan, who excelled at this. Both sides of the aisle viewed him as an incredibly good communicator because of his ability to use metaphors and speak directly to the people.
That's a really good example. You know, One thing that's really hard, even at Tech, it's really hard to not only encourage but maintain civil, informed debate within our party. Sometimes people, I don't think that they necessarily dislike each other or mean to go after each other, but I think they get very passionate, and I think they tend to they tend to stay in their emotions a little too bit, and that's, to me, that's a little dangerous. You need to be able to step outside of your emotions when you deal with politics to maintain professionalism. So how do we encourage civil and informed debate within the party, even when you disagree on policy? How do you maintain that at the GOP, and how can younger Republicans do that?
First off, it starts with us, man. We can't control the way other people talk or present themselves. We can control how we talk and present ourselves. You don't have to answer anger with anger. You don't have to answer hatred with hatred. We just speak the truth.
That's a very well put way to elaborate on that. I'm going to go ahead and take us into our last topic here. President Donald Trump and Speaker Burroughs and their accomplishments. First of all, I just want to say, you know, when I believe you were there with Carl Isitt. Tepper hosted a town hall before Burroughs took office.
Yeah.
And I was there, and I supported what Carl Tepper had to say, you know, and hear him. I was there willing to hear him out, and I wanted to hear, because you want to support your hometown officials, especially when they are really hometown officials. There's a part of you that wants to support them, and I wanted to come out and hear that. And I heard what I heard, and I decided that I did agree with Representative Tepper. And so I got the Tech students involved and got them to rally behind supporting him, because that was a really heated political scenario going on there for a bit. And so from your view as a county chair, what has President Trump accomplished that benefits Lubbock County specifically? Because even Donald Trump is a really hot topic here at Texas Tech.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's just because of the way Trump presents himself. He's a New Yorker, right? He's big. He's loud. He's got a lot to say. But if you look at the record of what he's done, it's pretty impressive. We're just at the beginning of his first term. And already, one big thing to note is a lot of the saber rattling we saw overseas between Russia, China, etc. That's calmed down. Instead of making war, he's been making trade deals. And I've been abundantly impressed with that. That's been pretty awesome. Not only that, one of the major changes from the Biden administration is he has been putting highly competent officials in each of the cabinet departments. And we could take a long, long time to go into all the various details of what that means and what they're accomplishing. But it's going to have a substantial impact over the coming decade. Between conservative judges he's appointed at the courts, the people he's put in place in the Department of Justice, and the interior, et cetera, et cetera. It's just been positively wonderful. Not only that, one thing we see that will affect campus is the rollback of the DEI and gender type policies. DEI is a wild thing, Kevin. I think you and me both, we're here for diversity. We like equity. We like inclusion. But when you create these departments to enforce these so-called diversity things, it creates a real mess. Really, it's just affirmative action by another name. I talked to KMAC News about this the other day, and I told them, I said, all the DEI is just taking into account things like race and gender in hiring decisions, which absolutely flies in the face of what the civil rights reformers of the 1960s stood for. They wanted to see everybody get an equal shot. They didn't want to see the scales tipped based on someone's color or their gender. So that's something Trump has worked really hard on, and I've been very proud to see.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue, you know, and that's kind of how you and I met, was a lot of these issues I was facing, as sick as I am and disabled, and I was hitting some barriers because everyone was like, oh, DEI, and I was like, no, I'm talking about patient access. I'm trying to help people, including myself, because I realized, you know, that it wasn't just myself having these issues. There was other people having them, and that's where I kind of came in. And what I even experienced, just getting some of the rare medication that keeps me alive. And I don't know if you know this, Mr. Bruegel, but man, when I called these pharmacies in some states, at least there for a hot minute, life-sustaining medications that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars that can kill you real easily if you misuse them or mismeasure, I was getting people on the phone from the pharmaceutical companies, and normally pharmaceutical companies and I work really well together because we understand patient access, but that the DEI thing had created a situation. They were hiring people that didn't know what my medication was, didn't know how to pronounce it, didn't know what it did, didn't know how to measure it. I pretty much had to walk them through on the opposite end of the phone on my medication list, what they are, teach them about it, and help them set up the order to get on here on time so that I could survive. And it was a scary thing. I don't think people realize just how far DEI was taken.
Yeah. No, it went deep. And it was just another one of the Democrat schemes to try to win votes. It was some real nonsense, and they removed the things that matter from hiring, like competency, intelligence, things of that nature, and just replaced it with, what does somebody look like?
Yeah. Talking about DEI, my first couple of semesters here at Tech, I tried applying for some on-campus jobs just to try and get some income while I was in college. And I never heard anything back because majority of Tech and the people who work here at Tech are of a specific race, and for some weird reason, I never heard anything back, and it kind of sucked because I'm a struggling college student who pays thousands of dollars in tuition and can't get a single job. I got my first job outside of Tech because I struggled to actually find one because everybody in Lubbock said that they were hiring but didn't want to hire. And it really sucked because I kept putting applications in everywhere and nobody wanted to hire me.
Yeah, man, that DEI stuff is just modern day racism, and it's ugly.
I think that's important to understand. It's the flip side of racism, right? Because they spun it backwards. And they're doing the exact same thing they were accusing the other side of doing, but from a different angle. It's just like if it was flipped, you know, black and white, white to black.
That's right.
That's exactly what it was.
Racism is bad yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Nothing's changed about that. And that's yet another example of how our faith informs our politics. Jesus didn't see people's race. He came to save the Jews. He came to save the Gentiles. And that pretty much encompasses everyone of every color in this world.
You're absolutely right. And that's a question I get asked a lot. You know, when I'm very proud of our local GOP, our Lubbock area Republican women. And when we have events, I like to take photos. I like to show people what I'm a part of because it makes me feel good that we have that community, that we have that network, that family, that community of people that are willing to put everything aside and come together for the common good. And a lot of times people come at me and they're like, hey, you're just surrounded by a whole bunch of white people. And I'm like, yeah, you're just seeing one little event. Let me take you to a couple of events. Like, did you know that we have a candidate here who's Indian running in the U.S. Senate? He's a local. He's part of the community here. I tell that to Tech students, and it blows their ever-loving mind because they've never heard of Indian Republicans. And then from there, I'm like, oh, well, did you know about Abraham George, the Texas state chair? And that's why I think it's really important to – we've got to, in my opinion, we've got to increase visibility too. Because there is a narrative that this is the old white person's party, and that's just not true.
That's right. It's very much not true. That's not been my experience, and I think we've reached a point where the party that doesn't see color.
I completely agree, because I've never once been to any event involving conservatives or Republicans where color was brought up, ethnicity, gender. I mean, we'll talk about mental illness sometimes. We'll talk about culture, but it never gets into the other area, you know. It, and then if I, when I've gone to other side stuff and listened to what they had to say, because I get curious and I want to understand both sides. Man, some of the stuff that gets said and put out there, and I think you've even seen it locally. In fact, I know I have. Mark McBrayer, I've had wonderful interactions with him. I went to a city council event one day to talk about the health department, and it was an issue, and I had an opinion, and I handled it well, I like to think. But there were some people that showed up there of our mayor dressed up in a radical attire of someone from the past that I'm not even going to mention on this podcast. And I was just like, man, really? That's where you had to reach to get something against the guy to take a jab? That's taking it to a whole new level that we don't even do on our side.
Yeah, man. Well, to wrap up the issue on racism, I just have to go back to what Dr. King said in his most famous speech. He said, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." And if that doesn't say it all, I don't know what does.
You're absolutely right. That is a great way to end that topic. That says it all right there. And I meant to ask this question earlier. I was kind of talking about our local leaders and stuff, and then I dove into Trump and kind of went down the rabbit hole there. Let's talk about Speaker Dustin Burroughs. I get flack for supporting him, you know, and in my opinion, you're not going to agree with everything that your local elected officials or any elected official says, thinks. None of us have the same thought process. We all have our own opinions. That's what makes America great. But talking about Speaker Burroughs, he's been praised for strong conservative leadership. Do you happen to know, as the GOP, some of his top achievements that the media tends to ignore?
Kevin, we could spend 2 entire podcasts going over what he was able to achieve just in his first legislative session as Speaker of the Texas House of Representatives. 2 things that have really stood out to me that I think are incredibly impactful are he was actually able to achieve meaningful property tax reform. People all across the state of Texas are going to see a reduction in their property tax bill directly because of his increase of the residents' homestead exemption. So if you own a house in Texas and it's your primary residence, you're going to be saving on your taxes going forward. That's just one thing. But the second thing that comes to mind is something that he and Senator Charles Perry spent a great deal of effort on, and that's on the water bill that recently passed. Governor Abbott was actually in Lubbock last week to sign the bill with Senator Perry and Speaker Burroughs. And that is a $20 billion investment in Texas water infrastructure. For those of you that are new to our region, it's important to know that water is our lifeblood here in our society. The reason we've been able to create a thriving city here on the arid plains is because of our forefathers' investment in water infrastructure. And if we don't continue that legacy, we're going to literally dry up. And so that $20 billion investment over the course of numerous years is going to have an incredible effect working through the river authorities, the reservoirs, conservation efforts to make sure that the next generation of West Texans has something to drink.
Burroughs did have part in that water bill, and that is a great thing to remember and point out. One thing I really admire this about Burroughs, because I've encountered it myself at a different level completely, but he's really good at getting both parties to get along, make deals, and agree, and actually work together to accomplish something instead of just letting it become a giant contest of agitating each other. And I really respect the way he handled his position this session. That's my opinion. You know, there's some bills that I wish would have got passed. They didn't. Okay, big deal. Maybe next term or session. But, you know, I say that to say we did have a lot of accomplishments. Burroughs accomplished a lot in that session, and people don't realize that. Even my friend Andrew Sinclair, he was at the Capitol. He watched a lot of this happen. I don't know if you knew him or not, but he was very active here at Texas Tech when he was here. And so I want to ask, you know, as conservatives, how can we help protect and promote the gains made under Donald Trump and Burroughs this session?
Once again, Kevin, just like we started off, it all goes back to communication. We need to continue to let our family, our friends, and our neighbors know what was accomplished so that we can hopefully see even more of that going forward. You know, this is our last 4 years of President Trump being in office. He's going to make every effort to have as big of an impact as he can in that time. Then it's time for him to pass the torch. And my hope is that of the really good bench of future leaders he's developing, you know, Secretary of State Rubio, Vice President Vance, among many others, that we'll see another leader emerge to be our next president on the GOP side. And, you know, at the State House, in my opinion, Speaker Burroughs is just getting started. The numerous things we saw come out of this legislative session that are remarkable progress is just the beginning. I fully expect that he'll be reelected and that he will also continue to retain the Speaker's gavel going into next legislative session. And being the savvy diplomat that he is, I think we're going to see him deliver even more victories in the 2027 legislative session.
I do agree with that. You know, I've made the argument, you know, depending on the environment you're in, that's going to often play hand in hand with how many no votes you get, how many yes votes. It's not always an indicator of whether somebody's a good Republican or whatever the case be. Really paying attention to how they handled themselves in that environment. Did they get work done? Did, you know, was it a successful legislation in the sense that a lot of bills that needed to get passed got passed? Or was it a stagnant session? And I don't think we saw a stagnant session. I think we saw a lot of bills get passed that, quite honestly, it could have been the complete opposite had Burroughs not conducted himself the way that he did. And I don't think people realize that.
Well, and something, Kevin, that many members of the legislature have been talking about offline, even among the people that opposed them, the people on the other side that had great talents, he was able to engage them and leverage their knowledge to create part of this incredible working product of the Texas House. We don't often see people in politics, particularly the first go-round, reach out to their former adversaries and say, hey, you're smart. You know things. Let's make a difference. And that's exactly what he did.
And on this last question for this topic, we're going to tie it right back to the Trump administration. Is there anything as the GOP chair here that you see Trump's administration that aligns with the goals of Republicans at a local level here in Lubbock? Going as far as from like through 2025, through the rest of his term, is there anything that stands out?
You know, the one thing we haven't talked a lot about is the border security matter. Under Biden, border was basically just open, man. People were pouring across, drug dealers, cartel members. Trump's put a stop to that. And I think that'll have a major impact here in Lubbock. People don't realize the impact those drug cartels were having even here in our community. And what Trump has done for our national security is absolutely incredible. That'll have ripple effects throughout our community as well as the surrounding area.
No, I completely agree, and I've had to at multiple times. I don't think people realize, I don't want to harp on Lubbock at all, but the fact is, during that administration, and Lubbock has always been kind of a really good drop-off or buying point because of where we're located. And you'll see it on different narco documentaries, crime documentaries, and shows. It is a problem here. And even right before Trump took office, I was having problems with some people that moved in next door. And, I was taking photos, calling LPD, giving them license plates numbers. And, once they got their case put together, they shut it down. But it is a real problem.
No, most definitely, Kevin.
All right.
All right. As we close this podcast session, we definitely thank you, David, for being on this podcast. And one thing that we always ask our guests at the end of every episode is, what advice do you have for younger conservatives and Republicans to open up about their political views and basically start showing up to events and stuff like that?
Man, and you hit the nail on the head right there. Show up to events and listen twice as loudly as you speak. You'd be amazed what you can learn when you just tune in and pay attention. And guys, if I can just add, I'm really grateful for the work you guys have done on campus. I think the impact's going to be felt here in our community, so keep up the good work.
Thank you, David. And thank you once again for giving us some of your time and taking time to speak with us and to younger conservatives and Republicans, not only in Lubbock, but across Texas by coming onto this podcast. It means a lot, and we really appreciate the work that the GOP does here in Lubbock.
Thanks, guys, and thanks again for having me on.
All right. Well, thank you once again, listeners, for riding right with the Raiders. Once again, I'm Kevin Allen.
And I'm Caleb Jensen.
God bless America and God bless Texas.
Rec'em Tech.
Raider Power.